copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
My name is Yevgeny Yakovlevich Sologubenko, but basically my American friends call me Eugene. I do sound a little bit more American than most Europeans. The only reason to it is, hopefully you'll understand as I'll share with you my story in just a couple words. I was born in a Jewish family. My father was a Jewish mathematician, graduated from Bauman University in Moscow. My mother was a stage manager in a people's theater or community theater. Basically, a very happy family. My grandfather, a celebrity in a communist party. He was one of the eight people in Soviet Union allowed to play Lenin. The only problem, he was Jewish, so he got to play Lenin only in a small republic of Moldova. As I was growing up, I didn't really know that I was different from any of the kids, but by the time I went to the middle school, I realized that I was different. I didn't look different, and I didn't speak different. I spoke the same language, but I got beaten up in school. I got picked on in school, and the reason was that I was Jewish. If you've ever seen the movie Schindler's List, and if you remember, in the very end, there's this beautiful picture of the Jewish people waking up, a little bit of a snow on the ground, and an Allied soldier comes into the factory, the gates are open, and one of the Jewish men comes up to him, and the soldier says, "You're free, you can go now." And the Jewish man says, "Well, where do we go now?" And the soldier tells him, "I don't know, but don't go east, they don't like you there." That was the story of my life. And I decided that I was going to kill the bullies that made my life miserable. So I started hanging out in the bars of the downtown of the city of Chisinau. When I was 12, my mother baptized me in the Eastern Orthodox Church. When I was 13, my father took me to my bar mitzvah. My first Bible stories were coming from, obviously, the Old Testament, the celebration of Purim. I started doing martial arts because I was going to kill the bullies. So I started praying to the icon of Jesus and Mary, hanging over my door, addressing Buddha. The Soviet Union was kind of a spiritual vacuum, you can probably realize that. So by the time the Soviet Union falls apart, here's this teenager who is intent on killing the bullies, who is going to school looking for the opportunity and dreaming every waking day of how he's going to kill them and make sure that they know that that's because they hurt him in the past. And what happens is I get called a Russian pig. Now, you need to understand, for a Jewish boy to be called a Russian pig, I couldn't understand why they called me Russian, because I was not Russian. I was Jewish. I wasn't a fan of the pig. And so, when I was sitting in one of the bars, a buddy of mine came up to me, and he asked me if I would do him a favor. He said, "I need you to go to this weird place. It's called a church. It's in a music school." And you think, well, what a nice, wonderful man. Well, he wanted me to come to church to beat up a guy. An American pastor came with his daughters. My buddy wanted to date the pastor's daughter. So he was trying to get a date, but some stalker was coming to church again, wanting to go to America, wanting money from the family. So he needed somebody from the side to come and just beat up the guy, make sure he never comes back to that place. So there I am with 20 of my buddies, show up at the church. The guy's not there. So I had to go to church again because I gave my word. I was going to beat him up. And if you're from Eastern Europe, you know, if you give your word, you better do it, right? So I go to church for 9 services in a row. I'm the most faithful church attender. Well, long story short, that Eugene died 9 services later because I got the opportunity to hear the gospel. I got the opportunity to see Jesus in the lives of those people. And in 1993, November 28th, the guy of whom that pastor said nothing good is going to come out of this guy became a new creation in Jesus Christ. Now, 5 years later, I was asked to basically join that same very missionary as an associate pastor at the church. I was already about to graduate from a Bible college. 9 years from the time of conversion, I become the teaching pastor of the church and basically fulfilling the responsibilities of the president of the seminary. And since 2004, this is what I've been doing. Now, why do I tell you my story? I mean, here's just another participant of the forum with a blessed opportunity to be able to share something with you. And if I ask you today, what is your story? You probably would have either a similar story, a more powerful story, or a story of how Christ changed you. Or you can tell me a story of a friend that you know. The thing to me is, my story seems to be a fulfillment of prayers of many Western missionaries, of many Western churches, over the time that when the Soviet Union existed. There were books written, prayer meetings held for the new church, for the new believers to appear in the Soviet Union. For the Soviet Union to basically, I don't know if you prayed for the Soviet Union to fall apart, but it did. And so I'm the first generation of the Christian leaders. I'm the first generation of believers in my family, as far as I know. But yet, at the same time, I do have a struggle. Today we're talking about partnerships. And we will talk more about more practical stuff, I think, in the second session with the gentleman. At least that's what was in the schedule. But I would like to talk to you about the specific of the partnerships between East and the West, because I ended up being on both sides. I look and sound American somewhat, but I'm not. I've never lived in America. I just walked with American missionaries. When people ask me, how is that your English sounds so American? Missionaries. Well, thank you, because when people give me a compliment about my English, I actually appreciate the opportunity, because if the Soviet Union falls apart, I'm Jewish, and I don't feel one with the Soviet people. Then I'm called a Russian pig, still being Jewish. Had no identity. Then I meet American Christians. I meet missionaries. They have identity in Christ, but then they also had identity and as Americans. They were very patriotic. The thing is that I was attracted by both. It was easy to become a Christian. It's not very easy to become an American. Or for some of you, we'll probably say it's not very even advantageous. We're talking about cross-cultural ministry. We're talking about specifically about the taking the gospel. In 2004, I was challenged with a problem. The world I knew was destroyed when the American missionary was asked by his board not to come back to Moldova. He went on a vacation, and his board says, you're not coming back. We were devastated. The worst part was, we realized he should have gone. He should have been gone, because for the 9 years that he served in Moldova, he didn't appoint a single elder. He trained leaders, but he was the only leader. He had people who acted as elders, but he told them what to do. He wasn't willing to release, and so there were people back there, back home, his board, who said, no, you're not coming back. And so when he left, we didn't know who we were. And so we prayed, and one thing that came to me when I was asked to become a teaching pastor was that we need to stop being a mission field. We were a mission field from 1992, 1993, when I came to know the Lord. In 2004, we decided we need to start sending missionaries. I'm going to tell you the story of how it happened in just a little bit. But today, I don't want to just be speaking to you, because it is in a European Leadership Forum. So today, we will actually be doing a lot of talking, and I hope that you will be doing a lot of talking. We'll go through through an outline. But I want to share with you a couple things before that. When I tried to Google this, now, I didn't know that whether that was originally designed by the Lausanne movement or whether this somehow appeared. I tried to find who quoted this. More Google links were going to the Lausanne. So I saw it at a church when it said the whole church taking the whole gospel to the whole world. And the way I understood it, and that's what changed me in 2004, when I realized it's not just the American church. It's not just the European church. It's not just the Asian church. It's not just the it is the Moldovan church. It is my church. It is me. And I'm supposed to be taking the whole gospel. And I understand the whole gospel basically meaning the good news of the Lord Jesus Christ, but also feeding the hungry. You know, putting the social element there. And we can talk about that in a separate presentation of what the whole gospel means. But basically being the hands and the feet of Jesus Christ. And the more scariest part to me is the whole world. Me, Moldovan, who just got a visa-free travel with the European Union last April, who had to go through and jump through a lot of hoops just to come to the forum every year, going to the embassy and trying to prove that I'm not an immigrant, that I'm not going to stay in Hungary. And it is a beautiful country, but honestly, I do like Moldova more because I was born there. It is my homeland. And yet at the same time, how can Moldovans take the gospel to the whole world? Well, today, by God's grace and thanks to our European friends, we are the only country in the world where we can now travel without a visa from Oslo to Vladivostok and further down all the way to the Central Asian countries. But a little bit more about that as we go on. When I Googled, actually I was looking for some info, for infographics, I Googled some photos so that it would be a little bit more exciting, especially for those of you who are visual learners. And I Googled the word partnership. I had beautiful infographics you're going to see. Then I decided, you know what? What if I Google East to West partnership? Do you know? There were no infographics. There were no arrows. There were some kind of photos of people, some kind of gatherings, but none of them communicated the partnership between the East and the West. And I think the issue is, truly, we are having a hard time here. We're talking about it. We are understanding that there needs to be a partnership, but sometimes there's no partnership. And that's what I would like to address today. We talked about some of the trends and the missions, and I'm going to try to make it a little bit more practical today as we're talking about it. One of the phrases by Harry Truman that made me realize, and I didn't know it was Harry Truman. Again, if you Google this phrase, people say it was said by Ronald Reagan. I heard it from Dino Riza from the book called Servolution. That book revolutionized my understanding about 3 years ago or 4 years ago when I read it. Because he said basically, if you stop caring about who gets the credit. Like if you say, let's share the gospel with this people group, let's take a mission trip to this remote region, and you don't care that your church's name on it, your organization's name on it, you don't market it as, this is me. But you say, you know what, let's just do it together, and whatever pans out, if it's all of us, if it's just one of you, I don't care. You will see how much more things for the Lord we can accomplish. And this is pretty much my theme of my mission life today. And I do hope that you will see why it is so important as we're going to go through this hour. For who has known the mind of the Lord that he should instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. Here is a little story. When we decided that we need to become missionaries, we didn't have any money. Now, if you know of anything of Moldova, it's the poorest country in Eastern Europe. It is poorer than Albania, and I know Albania is poor. If you come to Moldova, you'll see that there's probably the biggest number of SUVs and BMWs, and we have a dealership for Porsche. Now, I drove you around in a very nice vehicle, right? We talked yesterday about some of the cultural things. It's amazing that in a top-down society, how much more you can do. Because we as missionaries, we have this feeling like, you know, I need to appear poor. I need to be down on the ground with people. You know, like the poorer I appear, the more things I can do. Well, I'm here to tell you, I'm driving a black SUV. It wasn't by design. It just happened. It just, you know, it's a different story. But you won't believe how many doors opened up for me in the government. We work with police officers. I walk into a Minister of Internal Affairs office. I can go into any police station, and a lot of them, of these guys, will know me. Because we're trying to reach out to these police officers. They respect power. And what communicates power better than a black SUV in the Soviet Union? We got permits of running a camp without paying a single bribe every single summer for the last 3 years. Just because I bring the director in the black SUV, and he gets out of my SUV, and he goes to the government office to get, and there's like 8 different permits you have to get to run it. And he gets them without a single bribe, because he appears powerful. Now, this is a little bit of a step aside. But, so when we were asked, I felt from the Lord, you need to start sending missionaries. What do you do? Some of you represent wealth of experience and knowledge in large organizations. Some of you represent very new work. Some of you represent very small teams. Others represent large schools. So I do understand there's a variety of people. So I was, our school, we got only 25 students. We're a church of about 200 strong. The Lord says, you need to start sending missionaries. So I show up in America, and I'm trying to fundraise. You know, we just lost the missionary, and we lost about 75% of funds. I show up at this church, and this missions pastor listens to my plea, to all the needs that we have, and he says, here's what I got. He says, I got $10,000 sitting in the account that were donated 10 years ago. They were donated specifically to reach out a people group. And I understand that we're being recorded on video, so I'm not going to call the actual name of the people group or the names of the people, just for the sake, as if it's going to end up somewhere. But there's going to be a people group in Kyrgyzstan. The missionaries came there, and they did the traditional American vacation Bible school sport outreach in the village. They got beaten up, literally, and thrown out of the village. 10 years later, we don't really have good contact with that people group. There's about 300,000 of them. They live in the villages. They don't intermarry. Now, would you consider sending a team of Moldovans? Now, the money was donated to send how many ever people it would pay for people to come from America to U.S., to Kyrgyzstan, and how many days, 5 days, 7 days. I had people, I didn't have money. They had money and they had vision. I had a desire to reach out the world. They knew where they wanted to go. So we put that together. We met in November. In May, I had a team of 6 Moldovans from our seminary showing up in Kyrgyzstan in a remote village, knowing nobody. We got a permission to actually clean an old kindergarten and live in the kindergarten room where the police station where nobody was on the first floor and they were on the second floor. For the first 2 weeks, our people were scared for their lives. They stayed there 40 days. By the time they left, they were the honor guests at the weddings. The mayor had them at their home. And they were, most importantly, asked to come back. And we were able to introduce some local missionaries from Bishkek. The second year we came, it was another month. Now, the missionaries were asked, would you consider setting up a house in our village? By the third year, the missionary was already living there. And the desire was to translate the Jesus film into a dialect. There are 2 dialects of those people. One of the dialects, there's 300,000 people that need to hear the gospel. The Jesus Field Project comes in and says, we want to translate it. Where do we get the people? Who will be the voice of Jesus and the disciples? Long story short, the mayor, the principal of the school, they're not believers, but they got to be those voices. Somebody in the West paid for the translation, but the resource was right there. 10 years later, there's a translation of the one-story project, 50 Bible stories, into the Shangxi dialect of Mandarin, into the Gunsu dialect of Mandarin. There are short-term workers working there. There are long-term families working there. There's actually a known national church of nationals among that people group. The interesting thing is we still don't have any money, and we still don't have many resources. But when we partnered and we put the vision together, we were able to see some great things. And I do hope that as you leave today, you will get some of that feeling back, some of that experience back. But we have the mind of Christ. I love this. I love this phrase, we have the mind of Christ. You know, the evil one is so crafty how he can get us to, he entices us with sin. And sometimes you end up in sin and you're like, how did I end up here? Because he's very crafty. But you know what? Mind of Christ is a little bit smarter than the evil one, right? And so when you think about that, I'll give you an example of creativity. An Uzbek pastor, and you know anything about missions in Uzbekistan, it's one of the highest persecuted countries in former Soviet Union. Christians are actually suffering. Christians are actually being imprisoned. You cannot own a Bible. They just allowed the individual believers of registered churches to own one Bible at home. But if you're not part of the registered church, you will actually get a $2,000 fine for even owning a Bible in your home. This pastor, he's pastor to the Uzbeks, not to the Koreans, not to the Slavic people who live in Uzbekistan. Uzbeks cannot really convert to Christianity there. So he decided, if we cannot have a church, we cannot meet in homes. He decided to do an interesting thing. He had a church in Russia, help him raise money, and he bought a minivan. And you know what he does? Throughout the day, he has a specific location where he stops, picks up people in the van. They drive for an hour and a half around the city. They're having a worship service. They're singing. He's preaching. And then he drops them off. He goes on to a different location, picks up another group of people. They're having a church. Isn't that a church? That's a different way of doing church. That's not traditional way of doing church. And you and I will probably have a hard time going to church like that. But if that's the only option, when we have the mind of Christ, we can come up with some of the most amazing creative things. Now, today I want us to have a little bit of a forum, like I said. So at first, I want us to be more of a, what I would call like an open forum. We'll not break into groups in the first part. I want us to talk about some of the existing models of missions that we are used to. And we're having representatives both from East and West. So I do have some things I had written down myself, but I want to give you a word. So what kind of models of missions we have today? Okay, I'll call the first one. We have large denominations setting up mission agencies like Southern Baptist in the United States. In the United States, you know, they have an international mission board. You know, we have a model of churches pouring the money there, missionaries being paid a set salary, relocated from the United States to different parts of the world. That has been until recently, until some changes happened there with a new president. But that is the model that they used to have until this. What kind of other models we have for missionary outreach today? Anybody?
Short-term teams.
Okay, we have a very developed short-term team model where people go, hopefully, to do ministry. Or yesterday there was a little term that we call it spiritual tourism, where people come and, you know, they feed a child and go on a tour for 10 days of Savannah or, you know, look at monasteries. You know, there's good things and there's bad things. We send short-term teams from Moldova to Russia. Any other models? Sponsoring of local evangelists. Could you clarify that a little bit? Is that Western organizations?
Western paying money into some local church or having a partnership with a local.
There's some setup where there's seminaries, there's Westerners coming and teaching and then training this mission, you know, this evangelist, and sets up some kind of a salary or some kind of a financial support. Any other models? What is your model? I mean, what kind of, you know, you obviously are part of the mission network, so your ministry is doing model.
I think I mentioned I'm a publisher.
Okay.
Some of our material being done in Moldova.
We also run a foundation for reaching orphanage children. The real work is very often done through the Facebook group chats.
I mean, I'm actually very impressed. I mean, there's use of media, there's use of business, there's use of you know, publication. I mean, we can go on. I mean, I just wrote down literally three things: large denominational, parachurch organizations, and then maybe independent mission efforts. There's so many more things. But let me ask you a question. With all the models that we have, with all the things that we've done in the last, say, even 100 years, have we done the job of taking the gospel to the whole world? I think that this is a question that has, you know, doesn't require an answer, because we understand we wouldn't be here if the job was done. We would be celebrating downstairs, right? Or hopefully in heaven, yes. Very good point. Now, there are some very key problems that we are facing. Because obviously with all the models that we came up with, we're still facing the issue where we do not have a very strong partnership. And that's why there's even a need for a topic of how do we partner from the East and the West? Because, you know, Westerners are doing a lot of things. Over the last 22 years, as soon as the Soviet Union fell apart, and yesterday's speaker was actually, you know, made a very good point. You know, when the Soviet Union fell apart, some of the churches were not ready. Western churches were not ready. And when... You know, so basically what happens is, if it's, you know, you have all these missionaries coming. They're coming and saying, Russians, you need Jesus. But here's the deal. You don't really know what you need. Let us tell you what you need. I'm telling you as somebody from the other side, right? Now, you will say, no, we didn't do that. Now, I'm not just saying Americans. I'm talking about the Westerners as perceived by the East. Now, this is a forum, so I hope we're going to be honest here and not just flattering. So here is the situation. We do have communication issues. We talked about yesterday about the cross-cultural communication. We do have a communicational gap. Westerners, I'll just give you an example. We talked in our little group. Westerners are truth-driven. To you, if your president fails... You publish it in the biggest newspaper, you put it on the screen, you talk about it for a week, and you fire him. If our president fails, we try to cover it up. Because we're Asian in our mentality. You know, the Soviet Union and the Russians, we want to save face. We don't want to appear weak. So when I tell you there's no troops in Crimea, I'm telling you the truth in my mindset. You know, and I'm giving you an example right now of what Putin did. In his mind, he's telling the truth, because he can twist a little bit of a... They're not officially the truth. They don't have any patches. And the Russians are saying, he's our hero. And the Westerners are saying, are Russians going crazy? And the Russians are saying, but he's telling the truth, isn't he? So we have a communication gap, and we need to figure out some of the things specifically to the mission work of how to cross that bridge. Now, the next thing I want us to talk about is talk about some of the obstacles and pitfalls. There are some very key challenges. There's yesterday on the news was that the militant Hindus just told the Indian Christians, convert or get ready to die. And there's a photo of all these guys are being trained, militant Hindus. So you will hear about the major attacks of Hindus on Christians within the next several months. There are obstacles to taking the word of God to the rest of the world. There's geopolitical challenges. I just mentioned Russia. We in Moldova were training missionaries to go to Russia since 2004. We send short-term missions. In the last year and a half, I have a hard time recruiting Moldovans to go to Russia because they don't like what Russia is doing. They understand what Ukraine is suffering, what they're going through. And Moldovans, they're not saying I don't want to go, but they're not signing up. I had a Russian student. She had to stay back home because she felt persecuted in Moldova because people picked on her. She says, I'm not Putin. I don't even know him. I don't even live in the Western Russia. She was like somewhere from Ural Mountains. But there is a geopolitical reality that we have to live with. But does that mean that Russian people do not need the gospel? Now, I'll tell you. I told you 22 years ago, Westerners came to Russia to start missionary work. I'm here to tell you, American, and I would even say as much as Western efforts of taking the gospel to Russia failed. We have failed. We thought the door was going to be open forever. People talked about, the door to Russia is going to close one day. Nobody thought it was going to close last February. It started closing a little earlier, even years before. Or, you know, do we have somebody here from Operation Mobilization, I think? So OM, you shut down your offices in 2006 in most of the cities except for one office in St. Petersburg because of the pressure of the Russian government against Western organizations. Well, I talked to the American wing of the OM. Okay, no, okay, so you moved. Or maybe it wasn't St. Petersburg. Maybe I mistook. But the issue is that most Christian organizations, Campus Crusade shut down their training center, their New Life Bible College. There's very few, some of the nationals are still working in some of the larger cities, but the Westerners are not welcome there. And the situation is that even if you try to send missionaries there today, you will not be accepted. I sent a team to Rostov, and we were told that if they find, the mayor of the city said, you can go to schools, you can go to orphanages, you can work anywhere on the streets, but if I find a connection to America, I'm going to shut you down, I'm going to make sure you never come to Russia, and I'm going to put that pastor to prison. So we have to pretend like we're not an American-sponsored, not English-speaking group. There are imperial attitudes of the Western partners sometimes. Now, this is not me. This is actually, I had a conversation about, this is my 11th visit to ELF. One of the first visits, I spoke to Nick Nedelchev, who was the former, president or chairman of the European Evangelical Alliance. And Moldova doesn't have an Evangelical Alliance. And he talked to me like, well, what do we do? How do we create an Evangelical Alliance? And we do have the present, General Secretary. And, you know, we've had a little bit of a conversation. And when, you know, I realized there's still no Evangelical Alliance. And actually, there's not one on the horizon. And I could tell you one of the reasons, that as I talked to Nick, even 10 years ago, one of the first visits to the forum, it is the attitude of what I would call the imperialist attitude. Every American organization comes up and says, we got the proper doctrine, we got the proper way of doing ministry. They come, they find Moldovan missionaries or Moldovan churches, they plant a church, they tell them, this is how you do it. And then even when they leave, I'm a Moldovan pastor. I got Moldovan pastors who don't want to work with me. And not because we're different, not because we don't believe in Jesus. It's just that they're doing it their own way, and they think that's the only way to do it. And they will lose the financial support if they're going to start working with me. And you think this is some small ministries? That was Southern Baptist, who were told they are not going to work with anybody unless they're part of the Baptist Union in 1997. Good thing is the person who was leading them was honest enough to come and tell us.
There are some other good examples.
Oh yes. I'm trying to present the problem. So we're going to be coming with a solution right now, and then we'll. So obviously there are cultural ethnocentricity. There are I'm talking about some of the obstacles that we're having. Yes.
There's a Danish lady, who has spent her lifetime as a missionary in a boot ministry in Africa. And I worked with an evangelist, an evangelist in the UK. And I introduced this evangelist to this lady. And he spoke to her about the need for evangelists. In your country of Nigeria, you need evangelists. And this is what she said. She'd been there for 40 years. I don't want to see another evangelist. And he was horrified. And I was horrified. And then she said, I'll tell you what happens. The American evangelist comes in, fills the stadium, takes the video, shows 5,000 converts, goes back to America and raises more funds. 3 weeks later, there's another evangelist comes in, does exactly the same thing, and the same people profess faith again. She said, it's an inch. What? Deep.
Yeah, less than an inch, yeah.
And she said, I don't want... And she was overreacting, I know, but she was making the point that we in the West have to be very careful how we make the most of what we do in other parts of the world.
Yes.
We take the glory to ourselves and we impose our own thing for our advantage on them rather than say, the church is the Lord's, you are the Lord's, your
amen. Now, let me pick on the Easterners, because I just picked on the Westerners enough, but one of the biggest problems is the lack of accountability. We do not like accountability. We want send us money and don't ask us for a receipt. Because what you call corruption, we call a way of life. And I've got the Eastern brothers laughing. But if we're honest, nobody likes accountability, but it's not even part of our value system, or it hasn't been for a while. If you lived in a Soviet Union or in a socialist country, everybody has been stealing. I'm Jewish, so I can pick on Jews myself. We like to joke about ourselves. So this Jewish guy gets hired to go to work at a big, like a big storage that supplies other stores. So a month later, somebody comes up and says, you need to go to the accountant's office and pick up your salary. He goes, what? They even pay a salary here? But that was the reality. We're joking about that, but it was the reality that is described. So in a sense, the Westerners, when you come in and you have the best intentions, you want to set up a publisher, or you want to set up a business, or you are trying to help some of them to start their own, a mission agency. And then you realize there's been a lot of abuse. There's been a lot of lying going around. There's been a lot of stealing going around. And I can tell you example after example where I am ashamed for the Easterners of how we have acted. So there's obviously a problem. There's obviously a situation where, if we just, we'll just look at the West and say, hey, you know what? They're just ethnocentric. They just want to make their own, their own business. And the West is going to look at us and say, well, they're just a bunch of corrupt people, and we're just not going to work together. Or are we going to try to bridge those, try to understand each other, bridge those gaps? And that's what we're going to try to do with the rest of the time today. Now, let me ask you a question, and as missionaries, I expect you to know the answer. What would make a pastor Dan? Music? Money? Yeah. Well, see, the Westerners say, yeah, if we pay him better money, he's going to be dancing, right? Now, I'm just picking on you, so I do hope you forgive me, because we are talking about the differences. I will tell you the gospel of Jesus Christ. And the because in most traditional congregations, unless you are from a full gospel tradition, you do not dance in the church service, you do not dance in private, you do not dance in public, and maybe you dance with your wife, but in my part of the world, nothing makes a pastor dance. But the gospel should be able to. Our ministry was invited to go on a mission trip to South Ossetia. By the time we got there, the plans changed. As missionaries, the plans change all the time. we're, you know, the key word for every missionary is flexibility. And so we were told we can go to either go back home or we can go to the city of Grozny, which is Chechnya. Now, when I think of Chechnya, you know, that's part of Russia, kind of in a form of a heart, but I call it the heart of Islamic terrorism. Because this is the Chechnya in the Eastern European mind. You never go to Chechnya. You know, if I was a Jonah, this would be my Nineveh. Now, you know why we never call ourselves missionaries when we go to Muslim countries? Now, I know you know you shouldn't be calling yourself, a missionary, right? But do you know why? I didn't know. When our team ended up in Chechnya, I realized why. Because they also have missionaries. That's one of their missionaries. So when you come to their home, or at least in Chechnya, and you say, I'm a missionary, they think you're there to kill them and their family in the name of your God. Because that's what their missionaries do. So we refer to ourselves as sent ones of the Almighty. That gentleman is actually responsible for the Beslan bombing of the school and killing of over 300 people. You know, most of them were children. The idea is shattered lives. That's Islam. I mean, militant. So does that mean we shouldn't be taking the gospel to them? By no means. We talked about the church is promised the tribulation. And sometimes we got to go to places where there is tribulation to take the gospel. They have the biggest mosque in Russia that seats about 10,000 worshipers. They have now three hairs of Muhammad inside the mosque, which makes it the most holy place in Russia for Muslims right now. These children, for generations, their ancestors fought against any type of Christianity. They fought during the Tsar's time. If you read some of the Russian classics, they talk about the Caucasus Wars, the Chechens. How do you share the gospel? These children's fathers were killed in one of the Chechen wars. How do you take the gospel to these children? How do you even come and say Jesus loves you? When they hear the word Jesus, their father was killed because he was fighting against the Russian who is representative of Jesus. And here is the answer, is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Pastor, I'm going to give his name. He was leading one of the leaders in the team. And he found out that in their culture, if you turn on the music that is national, the kids begin to dance. Dancing is part of who they are. So he said a very simple thing. Would you kids teach me how to dance? He didn't come and say Jesus loves you. He says, I'm here to hang out with you. We're going to do some kind of some games. But first, I want you to teach me to dance. And here's what happened. They did pick on him. They tried to teach him the girls' dance too. But over 40 kids heard the gospel of Jesus Christ during those 2 weeks. Just because a pastor was willing to go out of his comfort zone and dance maybe for the first time in his life. There is a huge potential when we overcome the cultural barriers, when we overcome the prejudices of Easterners against Westerners or Westerners against Easterners. And we can do so much more because those kids will probably be the future evangelists who will take the gospel to the rest of Chechnya, maybe to Ingushetia. I think it is Ingushetia or Dagestan, one of the two, that doesn't have a single known believer. It's one of the regions in Russia that is predominantly Muslim. Doesn't have a single known believer. Because they're not going to listen to me. I'm a white-looking Jewish guy. But they might listen to one of these kids if we reach them for the Lord, and they can go and they'll listen to their own. I want us to talk about some of the strengths. So now we're going to do a little bit of, we're going to break into groups. You know, we talk about the pitfalls. I want us to talk about the strengths and discuss among yourselves what would be some of the strengths if we were to overcome, if we were to be willing to risk that we may be cheated, or we may risk that a Westerner will come and tell us what to do. And talk about some of the strengths, some of the positive things that would happen if we were to overcome. And I'm going to give you an example of what I wrote down. You can kind of go from there. Maybe some putting the resources together. You know, some of the strengths or some of the things could be done, like human, cultural, educational, financial. Like in the case I told you, we had people who were trained. The American church had money and a vision of where to go. We put those together. We have a national church. They still have the money. We still have the people. Nothing changed, but there's a reached people group there. So what are some of the things, say, effective mobilization, ability to penetrate deeper if we did it together than separately? If Westerners, you tried to go to some parts of the world, you wouldn't get there. If Easterners, we went to some parts of the world, we wouldn't be able to get there. But if what could we do to be able to penetrate to the rest of the world? If we can, let's finish, let's get back to the general group, and let's share what we've been able to find out.
I have a list of topics that we're speaking about. I don't know if this is an answer on your questions or not, but we underline that it is important to have minds of Christ. Often we have minds of our own organizations. Gospel humility. We often dream about big partnerships. Maybe it is wiser and easier to start with a small projects and develop good relationships. We need to have courage to say what we see and what we feel about other missions, other people's missions. Often as receivers, we are afraid to be direct and clear, and we just see how everything collapsed. It is very important to have very good communication and clear expectations. Also, I call it as a mutual ethnocentrism. Westerners, they come with explicit ethnocentrism, but locals receive them with implicit ethnocentrism, and they are ethnocentristic both.
I like that.
Same level. Okay, better preparation, understanding of approaches that are working and effective. And one very good statement is that if you are not fishing, you are fighting. So if you are not involved in a real mission, you will be fighting. And last thing that I would like to add from my point of view, I think Missio Dei concept here can be very helpful, because foreigners and locals, they understand that their mission is not theirs, but God's mission.
Gotcha.
And we have to submit ourselves to that, so it's easier to have partnership.
Mm-hmm.
We are working his, we are doing his mission.
I like that. You answered my question exactly, and I actually heard things I haven't thought of, and I love that, and I should say I love that, I like the insight, especially of the Easterners' implicit ethnocentrism, because a lot of times we do not realize that, we do not understand that. We look at the other side and we say, oh, you got that little speck in your eye. But a lot of times we're not receptive because of the same issue. And I do like the Missio Dei. I mean, I like all of them, but these are the ones that stood out to me. That's exactly. The other group was meeting. You had one group over here. Right here. Let's go with you.
Okay. We're talking about one strength that we can learn from each other and enrich each other. And do the things that we're good at. So we can share the responsibilities, especially regarding the funding. Raising funds should be always a shared responsibility. The question of how to bridge out, we talked about that some things are negotiables, or we can negotiate, but others we cannot. And from a Western point of view, I think that the accountability, because a lot of times the money comes from the government, like 90% will come from the government and 10% from the organizations, and we have to show accountability to the government. And so that's not something you can negotiate. But the cultural expression, for example, of course we can agree on other things. Did I...
Great. Well, one comment I would like to make is that a lot of times we as Easterners do not realize that, especially the Western Europe missionary partners, they do have that government funds that they have to specifically account for. But we understand governments and we understand the extent of the government into our lives. But we never hear about that. we think it's just some people in a, you know, in a church donated some money. And so we think that we've been asked for too much. You know, well, I can't get a receipt. I bought it at the market. But if you explain to them, well, if I don't give a receipt there, they're going to come and take it from my salary. They're going to, you know, the tax inspection is going to knock on my door. We as in the East understand. So I actually like that very much. You know, the more communication and transparency there is, we can actually say, oh, yeah, you know what? You're in the same shoes that we are. You know, your government maybe just, you know, we think your government is better than ours, but I've actually not met a country where there's a, everybody's happy with their government. So we had a group right there. Okay.
So we talked about, I'm from Bulgaria, and we're in an interesting group. We talked about accountability in past communistic countries. And that's important, but that as well needs to be explained in that sense, I think. As it's not well explained, and it's not accepted as priority for the locals. Versus us being truthful, telling the truth and facing it. Because as I see it, I think so, when the communism collapsed and people used to be under power, when a lot of mission came from West, we accepted them in the same sense. As people in power. So we have the same attitude, which is the wrong attitude, but it creates this, like, we can not account or we don't need to account. It's in the same sense, it's kind of a trigger that goes along, if you understand that word. Also, problem with the mega churches now, and there's a bit more of explanation along to it. I think this is what we talked about.
The mega churches, they're basically repeating the mistakes which missions have already reflected about and know what they should be doing, but because there's not cooperation, they go direct and get the same thing. We felt it was maybe a bit black and white from your side.
Okay.
Addressing certain issues which started about 20, 25 years ago, and we are still in the process of ironing out and trying to fix, but probably not as black and white, because I think there are quite a few organizations who have learned and done their homework, but the wrestling to have true partnership is really there. That is a huge challenge. It needs to be established time and again through partnerships. So it's not the donor with the big stick
exactly.
From the West or from wherever. It can also be Korea, which is sometimes a bigger challenge even. The monocultural approach.
Yeah, I appreciate that very much because the reason I shared my story is I wanted you to understand where I come from. You know, I come from a small organization with a small school, and you know, we are learning to do things, and we're, you know, here is our Eastern perspective, and here is what we as a small ministry. You know, obviously, you represent, you know, you had experience with a larger ministry, and your perspective is very important for me to understand too and learn from you. And I will agree with you. For years, I thought that this idea of having missionaries come for 4 years and then go home on furlough for a year, I thought it was terrible. I thought it was like, what, you know, this missionary, he's my friend. Why is his organization requiring him to leave? And then I ran into an American missionary who should have gone and didn't. And basically, if his small ministry learns what large ministries learned years before that and took that as experience, they would already build it in and his family would be strong and his ministry would be strong and he'd probably still be in ministry today, which he's unfortunately not, because he, you know, there were some of these mistakes made. So that's what I like is in the forum like this, we can learn and we can try to see, well, maybe I didn't think of that. And I want to look into what these ministries have done because I'm not perfect. So yeah, I appreciate that. I would agree with you, but you know, that's my experience. So, and we do have one more group, right? Anybody been writing anything? Anything to add to what has already been said?
Oh, well, we talked about what it would look like if we overcame
our differences, and then we would be able to do a lot more, and then to communicate the gospel a lot more effectively, and then because we spend a lot of time and energy trying to understand each other and work out our differences and solve conflicts and all those things, so we would. It would be a lot stronger witness to the people there, and it would also enable us to reach a lot more people in a good way.
I like that.
Yeah, so we talked a little bit about that, and also like that issue of Westerners being better at listening and starting with more with, first of all, the fallacies of our own culture, and also what's good about the culture that we enter into, before we start pointing out what we think is the mistake, and also and then we went into the corruption thing, and a brother from Finland who has been to Latvia, Estonia, talked about like some of the things that in the beginning he thought was corruption, he figured out was probably not. It was just a different way, a different system, with a different way of doing it. Anyone else like to add?
That's actually very, very good. That's very... And I think that the idea also came up, you know, from this side, especially on this first thought, is... we will benefit tremendously if we overcome this. There's some awesome suggestions that came up here. And the benefit would be we would not be fighting each other. We would be actually effective in reaching the lost if we make an extra effort to finally overcome some of these issues. And yes, you had something to add.
Maybe just one other aspect, which would be so important, that we help local ministries and churches to work together.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly actually... the Evangelical Alliance approach, and it's not something which you can do from top down.
Yes.
It actually really needs to come from bottom up and understanding, but we can foster it and help, because that would, I think, also ease a lot of the relationship issues. Mm-hmm. If there is local cooperation, and I think it's also building dignity. We can do things as locals, you know, as nationals. We don't just need all the outside help to move things.
And as a national, I appreciate that, you know, as somebody who had accepted Western missionaries, when the missionaries come with this attitude, it makes me want to be better. It makes me want to work with others. And so I do appreciate that very much. And I think we are at the end of our session. Thank you so much.
Thank you.